Today is January 2nd, 2019, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, day 12 of the partial U.S. government shutdown. Is the end in sight? We'll go live to the White House. Internet accessibility is the key to technological growth in the developing world.
Essentially, internet plans that are affordable is going to be part of a package of measures that's just going to be needed to build the absolute foundations for any of this to matter.
And we'll take you to a Chinese festival where 1 million lights shine brightly. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump has invited congressional leaders to the White House today for a briefing on border security. We assume there will also be discussions on how to end the partial government shutdown. Joining me now is VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara. Patsy, let's begin with today's meeting at the White House. What can we expect?
Well, we don't know for sure. All we know is that it's happening at 3 p.m. today in about 3 hours. And so far, 8 lawmakers will attend the White House briefing, including Speaker-designate Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Now, we know that neither side has shown willingness to compromise. We can see this from the tweets and the statements. So will there be a deal, or will there be another public disagreement in front of the press like what happened the last time they met on December 11th? I have absolutely no idea.
That was quite a show that during that meeting. Well, incoming Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi, who you mentioned, has outlined 3 pieces of legislation she says will end the shutdown. How likely is the White House to agree to her terms?
Well, the plan that the Democrats hope to pass tomorrow when they take over the House would fund the closed departments and agencies until September 30th. But it would only reopen the Department of Homeland Security, which receives border security funding, only through February the 8th. So that would give Congress more time to break the stalemate and then to revisit this issue again, while at the same time trying to minimize the shutdown's effect, but essentially just kicking the can down the road. So would President Trump agree to these terms? Again, we don't know, but in a statement last night, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said that Nancy Pelosi's plans will not reopen the government because it fails to secure the border. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell also has said that he will not bring to a vote on the Senate floor anything that the president would veto. And if that's the case, then we are really just back to square one.
Well, we'll talk about the differences between Democrats and Republicans in just a moment. But now that the new year has begun, can we expect a wider impact on people from the government shutdown?
Yes, so the longer the shutdown continues, of course, the wider the impact would be. Everything from government programs such as food assistance, services to small businesses, the longer the shutdown, then potentially there could be delays or disruptions. We have heard reports that, for example, national parks where the trash cans are overflowing and the toilets aren't cleaned and because simply there's just nobody to take care of them. But also the bigger impact is consumer and investor confidence because it adds uncertainty in this economy that's already dealing with issues such as a trade war with China. And as we can see from the extreme gyrations of the stock indices these past weeks, it's been a bumpy ride and certainly the shutdown's not helping it.
Well, with the Democrats taking control of the House of Representatives tomorrow, how will divided government impact President Trump's overall agenda?
Well, with a divided government, certainly it will be a more hostile political environment for the president. And because of the divide, it is unlikely that there will be many legislative achievements, at least not very early on, although there are some areas of potential bipartisan compromise, possibly, for example, the bill to lower prescription drugs. One important thing to note is that a Democratic majority in the House means that they have the power of subpoena. They are able to ask the executive branch for certain information, and the White House cannot ignore it as they've done in the past because the Democrats can ask the courts to issue a subpoena. So this may mean anything from the president's tax returns or maybe other information pertaining to the special investigation of the Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. election and whether there was any collusion between Moscow and the Trump campaign. All these things are, of course, adding to the worry of the president in trying to govern in this very hostile political environment.
All right, Patsy, a lot of great information there, and we know that you'll keep us informed about any developments in the shutdown. Patsy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Russia grants consular access to retired U.S. Marine held in Russia on spy charges. Taliban insurgents have detonated a powerful bomb near a major military base in Afghanistan's southern Kandahar province, killing at least five soldiers and wounding six others. Protests erupt in southern India after two women defy a centuries-old ban to enter Hindu temple. Bangladesh election officials deny opposition claims of vote rigging in Sunday's elections. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists say they have found a large array of ancient but still inhabited termite mounds in northeastern Brazil. Writing in a recent study, the researchers say there are about 200 million of these cone-shaped and evenly spaced piles of soil that cover an area equivalent to the size of Great Britain. The collection of these 2.5 meters high by 9 meters wide mounds is so vast that you can actually see them by using Google Earth. The researchers found evidence that the termite mounds are about 4,000 years old and that they are the result of continuous labor by generations of the occupying termite species excavating a vast network of interconnected underground tunnels. One of the study authors says that the amount of soil excavated by the termites is equivalent to 4,000 Great Pyramids of Giza. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel. Chinese President Xi Jinping told Taiwan Wednesday it's time for the two sides to unify and didn't rule out using force to make that happen. Reuters' Ed Giles reports.
Taiwanese independence would be a disaster. Those are the words of Chinese President Xi Jinping, who made the comments in a speech on Wednesday in Beijing. Taiwan is China's most sensitive issue, and the island is claimed as a breakaway province of a one China. And in his speech, Xi said China will strive to lead Taiwan to a bright future under Beijing's rule. Reuters' Michael Martina explains.
So President Xi today, in his speech on Taiwan, made some fairly strongly worded comments. He said that the people of Taiwan must recognize that any formal move towards independence would be a disaster for the self-ruled island. At the same time, he really didn't mention any specific new policy proposals to reach that peaceful reunification.
The speech comes on the 40th anniversary of a key policy change in China, which led to the thawing of relations between the mainland and Taipei. And on Wednesday, Xi repeated that China will not renounce using force to return the self-ruled island to Beijing's control. After the speech, Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen urged Beijing to respect the Taiwanese people's thinking. And on Tuesday said the island's people want to maintain their autonomy from China.
That was Reuters' Ed Giles reporting. Digital developments that have upended businesses throughout the global economy, from music to manufacturing, are also changing what the world trades and how manufacturers and merchants move and sell their goods. Experts tell VOA's Jim Randall the digital revolution presents significant opportunities, but also serious problems for countries.
Global trade is helped by digital advances like artificial intelligence, e-commerce, and machine translation. They cut costs, and that's generally helpful to exporters in smaller nations and newer, less well-financed companies, according to economists. These massive computer servers, linked together in many nations, securely track transactions and data in a digital system called blockchain. These blockchains enable new exporters and distant lands to reassure potential customers that a new company can produce goods as promised, according to World Trade Organization chief Roberto Azevedo.
Everybody knows what or who Volkswagen is, or Toyota, or IBM, but nobody knows who is a small company. Is that a legitimate business? Are they in the market for quite some time? Are they legit? Those questions blockchains would answer.
Another digital development, 3D printing, may eventually mean that some factories are replaced by devices that print physical objects instead of just words on paper. More 3D printing could cut low-skill, low-paying jobs in developing economies, according to Brookings Institution trade and technology expert Joshua Meltzer.
It would then further undermine, I think, the comparative advantages that developing countries still have in low-cost labour.
Rural areas and developing nations have the lowest level of internet access. Only about half the world's population can currently get online. Meltzer says full access to broadband and mobile devices are needed to make serious progress.
Essentially, internet plans that are affordable is going to be part of a package of measures that's just going to be needed to build the absolute foundations for any of this to matter.
Manufacturing was a key to the rise of advanced economies. But economic activity in developed nations has shifted from making things to managing ideas and information in the services economy. Advanced economies have an advantage over developing countries because they have more highly educated workers with specialized skills needed for service industries. An expert in trade and economics says the shift to a services economy could make it harder for developing nations to catch up.
So you've already seen that start, I think. I think the digital revolution will really advance that to a great degree.
Claude Barfield of the American Enterprise Institute also says politics could complicate economic issues, as leaders of developing nations may be torn between allowing new digital companies the freedom they need to expand and boost economic growth and the temptation to use digital technology for social control and political purposes. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to VOA. The role drones play in our lives today is becoming greater and greater, as are the capabilities of these autonomous flying robots. Genia Dulat visited Caltech, the California Institute of Technology, where the potential for drones is being explored for surprising new uses.
In the 1950s, Caltech engineers and scientists started developing smart robots that would work in space without direct instructions from ground control. And in the past few decades, these machines certainly learned a lot. Yashwant Kumar works on these robots. After getting a task from Earth, he says the machines will figure out how to fulfill it on their own. And if one of the robots breaks, its colleagues will fix it or find a way to replace it.
Centralized control, where there's one computer which is controlling all of them and telling them what to do. What we do is decentralized, where each one is independent. Each one has its own computer. Each one can make its own decisions.
Teaching robots to think like humans is the goal of Caltech engineering professor Morteza Garib and his students.
We have cameras and we have a system that observing how students and professors, the engineers, they talk about, this thing is something wrong with it. How could I fix it? So they see the process of problem solving. So we teach the drones how to learn. We don't give them the information to memorize. Watch us, learn from us. So that way, next time we need you, you help us, because you can do it faster.
To test their drones, Caltech scientists use a special fan wall. It creates various wind types to imitate different weather conditions. This way, a self-thinking drone would be able to monitor the situation during any type of disaster and respond to it, making fast decisions. For example, to start evacuation immediately. These guardian drones, as they're called, just exist as a concept for now. However, Caltech scientists have already built a prototype for a self-flying ambulance that will be the size of a small car. When deployed, it would be able to airlift injured or trapped victims from hard-to-reach disaster zones and monitor a patient's vital signs during the flight. They promised to have an operational air ambulance ready in 2 to 3 years to be used by the fire department. The approximate cost for this real-life science fiction drone is expected to be about $5 to $8 million. Jenny Adulo for VOA News, Pasadena, California.
And from Washington, this is VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
I'm Jim Bertel, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition. Some 1.3 billion people live with some form of vision impairment, according to the World Health Organization. A team of innovators at an Israeli technology company has developed a small device to help them. As Laura Sepulveda reports from Jerusalem, the device connects to regular glasses and helps people with visual limitations identify people and products and read in more than 14 languages.
The Orcam may look like a Bluetooth earpiece, but it does so much more. As this promotional video shows, it speaks.
10 Park Street.
So the visually impaired can identify products, recognize faces, and read text, just by pointing.
So it's a camera on one side and a speaker on the other side. And actually we have chosen a very strategic place on our face, which is the arm of the eyeglasses. You just click it like this. It looks forward all the time. It helps to visually impaired and blind people to their daily activities.
Sif Aviram, Orcam's president and co-founder, says one of the challenges the creators faced was how to build a good interface between the user and the gadget.
And we came to the conclusion that just showing the finger will be the most natural and the most intuitive way to operate the device. Otherwise, it will talk to you all the time. So you want, only when you want to know what is in front of you, that device will start to talk to you.
And since one of the benefits that this product has is recognizing faces, we're going to see if this one recognizes.
No one.
Unlike many high-tech devices, the Orcam is not connected to the internet, so people's personal information is protected. Aviram says it has enough memory to store all the data it needs to recognize faces and products.
The products that we have, it's a database of barcodes that we install at the product. So actually we have enough memory to know everything.
The company says its contribution to the wearable assistive technology field could help the millions of people around the world who are partially blind or who have reading difficulties. Laura Sepulveda, for VOA News, Jerusalem, Israel.
Just outside of Washington is a father-son business that's achieving success by restoring old rusty cars into magnificent-looking vehicles. This is thanks to the work and inspiration of Bobby and Andy Cohen, who are featured in a multi-season television show called Junkyard Empire. Maxim Moskalkov filed this report for VOA.
5,000 square meters of old damaged cars, motorcycles, and boats fill this junkyard. For a casual onlooker, this might be a very sad sight, but for Andy Cohen, it's a real treasure.
I've been a junk hoarder for my whole life, so I like different things. I like fixing up stuff that shouldn't be thrown away.
Around 200 old cars end up in this junkyard every week. Some of them are sold for parts, others get repaired, still others are beyond repair. Andy's father, Bobby, started the business some 50 years ago and still spends every morning there.
What I liked about the business, it was always a lot of fun. It's a lot harder now. Things are a lot more competitive. And the internet has really taken a toll on us. You come in with a smile every day and hopefully somebody else will smile.
The father and son have very different approaches to their work.
So we got a London cab that was getting thrown away, and that was my father's project. and that was one I did not want him to do. He did basically the opposite of everything I told him, and I think he just did it just to make me mad, because he dumped a ton of money into this car, and in the end, it wouldn't run.
The unusual family business attracted the attention of a TV crew. That's how the show about the coins, Junkyard Empire, came to be featured on a subsidiary network of the Discovery Channel.
In my world, there's no idea too crazy. My empire.
5 years of shooting, 5 seasons, 60 episodes. This show about old rusty cars is popular all over the world.
And there's hundreds of junkyards throughout the United States. I think what's interesting is that it's a family business. My father and I started the business, and we banter very well back and forth. And I think that's what people like. They can relate to it.
The cars that end up at the Coins junkyard hold endless surprises, and every one of them can get a second chance.
And this was a salvage car, which was a junk car. Andy bought, and we fully restored it with a blown motor.
Andy Coyne restored this unique car himself. Yet he doesn't get a chance to ride around in it too often, because despite its sleek look, the roar of the engine is truly deafening, and he worries his neighbors will not put up with the noise. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Damascus, Maryland.
Imagine a magical place where lights are designed in the shape of the Statue of Liberty, the Eiffel Tower, and dragons. It's a place where children can enjoy a maze made of Chinese lanterns or see death-defying acts by gymnasts. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti takes us to Light Up, a holiday festival near Washington designed, built, and managed by Chinese workers visiting the U.S.
Jinlong Liu awaits his toughest acrobatic move, a three-ring leap. But his mind is with his baby son, back in China, and the first birthday he will miss. Liu is in the U.S. for 2 months as part of Light Up Fest, where 8 hectares of lights and lanterns look like a small city. 50 workers spent a month building the display in Virginia, just outside of Washington. Nightly, several of them walk the festival site for 2 hours, making sure the 1 million lights are working and delighting visitors, like 8-year-old Andrea Michelle.
We were outside, and when it's dark and there's all the lights, it looks beautiful and there's so many.
The displays contrast the intrigue of the East with patriotism of the West. 10,000 pieces make up the dragon. It's part of what's called a magical world, where some animals come to life. Head engineer Kuija Zheng points out the special design of the U.S. Capitol Dome and the Chinese Temple of Heaven.
Those buildings are the tallest and closest to each other, so the two buildings connect the friendship between the countries.
These Chinese workers overcame several challenges to be here. First, the jet lag of a 13-hour time difference. Then the shock of freezing winter weather. This night, it was -2 degrees Celsius. The cold is especially tough for Leo and his troop, but he says the warmth of the Americans make up for it.
People greet each other even if they don't know each other.
For generations, the Chen family from Shanghai perfected the art of clay modeling. But when Xugao Chen landed at a U.S. airport, American customs agents confiscated most of his clay, thinking it was a dangerous compound.
The clay they bought here is not as good because the one he brought from China made a figure that would not break.
But they all pressed on to bring a little taste of China here to reflect on all of us.
Thank you so much.
Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Loudoun County, Virginia.
Sounds like a great place to visit. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our studio team, Director Dan Brown and Engineer Wagner Roberts. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for making us a part of your day.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson.